Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It is Wednesday, and I was so excited to see Kevin Nealon's face up on the billboard at the Improv a couple weeks ago, and I realized he was just almost here. Bummed because I wanted to see him in the studio, because it's so funny, because Jake comes in and he goes, hey, have you seen Kevin Nealon's art? And I go, I was literally showing this to you 2 days ago.
I'm like, we've been looking at it all week.
It is amazing, and he called it a caricature, and I go, dude, it's better than caricatures. Like, That Christopher Walken is amazing. The Prince, the Andy Kaufman, the Jennifer Aniston one. Like, that's ridiculous.
That attention to detail, that's insane.
That's a gift. And I know we all know him for movies, and this great actor, and this great comedian, great book writer. But, dude, his gift for this is strong as well. Pisses me off, to be honest with you, man.
Born November 18th in St. Louis, Missouri. After graduating from Sacred Heart University, he did what any young man with a marketing degree from a Catholic university would do, and that start a career in comedy. After fighting it out in the clubs of Los Angeles, he landed an appearance on The Tonight Show, which eventually led to a decade-long run on Saturday Night Live. You've seen him in such films as Happy Gilmore and Grandma's Boy. You've seen them on the Showtime series, Weeds, and the CBS series, Man with a Plan. And this Friday and Saturday night, you can see him live on stage at the Improv. Please welcome, longtime friend of the show, Kevin Nealon.
Mr. Kevin Nealon, how are you?
Johnny T, how you guys doing?
I'm good, man. I'm excited that you're back in Kansas City, man. I was hoping I would see you. I'm gonna have to come up to the Improv to say hello, because I was like, man, I hope Kevin has time. I know that it's not your fault. You're not gonna fly in until Friday, but I just hope everything is great with you, and I hope you've been doing well, and everybody's healthy, and everybody's happy, and everything's good.
Thanks, buddy. Yeah, everything's going great. Just happy to be back out there again and working, and sure, you know, seeing people and getting to do stand up again. You know.
Yeah, no, what a weird year, of course. We've all talked it to death, I know. It's awful. You never realize how important that human interaction is until somebody takes it away from you.
I know it. I just never could imagine that. You're right. Social interaction is so important.
Yeah, and hey, I discovered, and Jake was telling me, he was like, hey, you've seen these characters. I go, did you mean his art? This is one of the big things I wanted to talk to you about for the last couple of weeks since I knew you were coming. That is an amazing gift you have, man. I mean, the caricatures are something you get done at an amusement park to me. You know, this, I'm looking at like your David Letterman, the Andy Kaufman, the Robin Williams, like the Robert Plant, the Aniston, the Jim Morris. I mean, they're all great, but some are stupendous.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I've been doodling. Like, I've been drawing characters since I was a kid, but never really focused on it. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I saw somebody left a sketch of some guy on a napkin, you know, with a big nose and a cap, and I copied that a lot and drew that a lot from my memory. And then when I was a little bit older, my parents had their caricatures drawn, and I had them hanging on my wall in my bedroom for a long time. And they were really good. They were framed, and they weren't like, you know, the run-of-the-mill caricatures. They were from by this Parisian artist who used pastels, different colors, and they were really good. So I think subconsciously I studied those caricatures for a long time and kind of saw how he exaggerated. And I just started drawing it as I got older. And even on SNL, doing the table reads, you know, when if I wasn't in the sketch, I'd be bored or something. I'd be sketching whoever's across from me, whether it was Chris Farley or, you know, Dana Carvey, whomever. And then 2 years ago, I saw, you know, I started following these artists on Instagram, and this one guy was offering lessons. So I, you know, I took lessons from him in England. I Skyped with him, and he kind of taught me the basics of caricatures.
Well, I mean, look, that Christopher Walken, that's the one I first, I think, that really struck me. That to me is not a caricature. I mean, and again, that's not a bad term. I'm just, I look at it, I go, Jesus Christ, like, look at the detail.
It's something more.
Yeah. At least it's something more than I've ever seen. You've taken it to a new place. So I'm just, you allow me to swing from your proverbial nuts, Mr. Nealon. It's really wonderful.
Thank you, my friend. I enjoy doing it. It's a fun hobby.
Yes. Now, by the way, can you buy these? Because that's the other thing I wondered weeks ago. I was like, man, I can't find a place that you could purchase these.
Oh, that's so nice. You know, I think eventually I'll put up a website, selling these information. But right now I have a deadline for a book, you know, on all the caricatures. I'm going to have like 45 to 50 caricatures. And then opposite that caricature, I'll have a little anecdote about my running with that person, whether it's Christopher Walken or Jennifer Aniston, and maybe something a little interesting about that person. And, yeah, so that's coming out in November 2022 with Abrams Publishing.
Excellent, excellent. But the barf bag stuff, I was like, that's a great idea. So you spend a lot of time on planes now and normally. So there's just a guy sitting across from him, and he just grabbed the barf bag and just did the art. Like,
yeah, barf bag, I feel the barf bag first.
That's great. That's so good, man. Such a great idea. You're always looking for something new to get that pressure out of you. I think you're one of those guys that has so many thoughts and so many feelings that you're constantly looking for that pressure relief in terms of just creating, like the hiking with Kevin. Like, to me, I was like, why is this taking so long for someone to come up with this idea? Who doesn't like to walk and talk with your friends? It's kind of an international way to make yourself feel better.
Yeah, I think about almost 90 hikes, you know, 3 seasons before the pandemic hit. I haven't done another one yet because I've been doing this book, but I really like doing that show because it kind of gives me a little good exercise. But plus, people love, you're right, they like to talk outside, and they're really forthcoming and revealing outside because there's no audience, there's no, like, you know, lights and stuff in front of them. It's just me with my selfie stick and a camera at the end. And it's been amazing what some people have kind of talked about, you know.
Yeah, no, I completely understand this. And my correlation with that is, so years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I bought 30 acres called, lovingly, Disgrace Land. And we cut trails out there. And we spend a lot of time out there walking around. It seems like every time somebody has an issue in their life or something good, too, or just a decision to make, they'll find a way out there. And we end up walking around the land just talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's something about being outdoors, I think, and the endorphins, you know.
Yeah.
It's and I love doing it, and people love doing it. And, you know, at first I was just getting my friends to do it, you know, like Conan O'Brien and Adam Sandler. Then I ran out of friends that were in the business. So I had to start emailing publishers, you know, and asking if their client would do a hike with me. And I remember when I asked Caitlyn Jenner to do it, she said yes. And I immediately went home and started thinking about a lot of questions. And my favorite question was, Caitlyn, if you could change one thing about yourself, what would you change? You get it.
That's goddamn genius, man. I look at some of these, all of these, from Bella Thorne to Sarah Silverman to, you know, you think about Martin Short, who, you know, by anybody's standards is an absolute legend in that world. And, you know, Sandler, just everybody. And there is something so friendly. I love watching these because there's something so genuinely friendly and relaxed and unrehearsed, and nobody's worried. Of course, and as a friend, and knowing you as Kevin Nealon, they're just a genuinely good person. Like, you're not coming up. There's no back door there. There's no secret question coming.
Yeah, and also, you know, it's only on YouTube, so I'm not really getting paid that much for it. You know, so it's not
sure.
Anybody's making a lot of money. It's just the pure love of doing it. You know, and yeah, it's just a lot of fun to do.
Yeah. Well, hey, did somebody break into your house?
Yeah, well, last December we were gone for a couple months, and the alarm wasn't working, and somebody broke the back window, and this guy came into the back, and I say it's a guy, but it could have been a girl. I don't want to be sexist, so this bitch breaks into our house. it's probably a guy. But I don't think he had any remorse about it, because around our house, you know, my wife has a lot of these positive affirmation signs, you know, like, you're exactly where you're meant to be. You know, everything you have, you own, you know, you deserve everything you get in life, you know, like that. And you probably saw those signs and go, yeah, that's what I was thinking, man, that's why I'm here. He took a few things and, but he got caught coming in through the back window, and there's some spots of blood around.
Yeah.
You know, so we had forensics come in, and we did some DNA sampling. And when I say forensics, I mean some of the actors from CSI came in and did some sampling, and also 23andMe. And they haven't found a perpetrator yet, but they did find a cousin. So we'll see what happens with that. But he took a few things, like a couple of handbags. But he took a few personal things of mine, like a couple of watches. I don't collect watches, but I had one I gave my father. And
oh, no.
One that Lorne Michaels gave me after I left SNL. I took that one. But they're both engraved on the back, you know. But the one thing that he took that was really close to me was this little urn that I used to wear on my neck, and it had some of the ashes from Gary Shandling in it. Gary gave me those ashes before he died.
What?
That's how crazy that was.
It's crazy, and you joke, but I mean, the things I value the very most in my home are those things that are so individual and really not worth much to anyone else. But like a watch that, you know, that Lorne Michaels gave you, This is the stuff that all your memories are held into.
Yeah, you're right. It's not worth a lot. It's just a Timex, a self-winding Timex, you know.
but you know what I mean. But the value is in where it comes from.
Yeah.
Like that's the stuff I really worry about all the time, man. Do you collect, like, from your history and your past and just your life? Just not self-aggrandizing stuff. I'm just talking about from moments in time. I tend to try to find something in everything.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that is the thing that I like, too. I don't really like stuff in general, but I do like things that have meaning to it.
Yeah, no, that's the stuff. That's the only stuff I really like. Nice things are kind of lost on me. I break and I sit on things. I crap, you know, just I spill. I'm terrible with nice things. But the things that I really love, like dude, I still have your, you know, because Jake, when you'd come by, like, hey, if there's anything you wanted to talk about, like, jot it down for me. And it was always in like, it'd be in your handwriting. So I'd take that and put it in the file, and I put it in a file in my closet at home, and I keep it forever. Because I just think when I see that again, I'll remember the times you came in the studio, the talks we had, stuff like that. Like, that's how I remember those things.
Yeah, you're like me. You're really sentimental about that stuff.
Yeah.
I used to keep answering the scene messages from girlfriends or girlfriends. I got a stack of them. I think about it somewhere. But, you know, it was just on the old answering machine on the audio cassette tapes. And it was like, I'm so sorry. You know, you're the sweetest guy, but I just have other stuff going on and distractions and, you know, things like that.
Oh.
So I listened to it. If I had to go in for an audition where I had to sob, I would listen to that right before I went in. It could have been like 20 years later, you know.
Yeah. I didn't save those ones because mine were a lot louder and faster talking when they were from the breakup, a lot angrier sounding.
Yeah, there's all stuff about restraining orders and stuff.
Yeah. There were words I'd never heard a lady use before. Those moments. If you're just joining the show, by the way, the great, the legend, Kevin Nealon is at the Improv KC this weekend. It's going to be Friday and Saturday night. And man, and now you're back to work. You're going to go out and tour. Movies are going to start up again. You know, you've got this book coming out, and this is not your first book. This has become another chapter, pardon the pun, of your life. Like, you really are a serious author.
I guess so. The first part was like 15 years ago. I think it was called Mission. I think it was about me. because she was getting all the attention, and I was being overlooked, you know.
Right.
And I did an audio version of it.
Your phone is breaking up, Kevin, just because I don't want to miss what you're saying. Your phone is starting to fall apart.
I'm re-entering the atmosphere, that's why.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's breaking up like a shuttle. But can you have that?
Better? Yes, much better. Thank you.
Yeah, it's probably my voice that's breaking up and not the phone. But I forget what I was talking about.
You were talking about the books.
Oh, yeah. So it was like 15 years ago, and then the editor I worked with, it was with Harper Collins. He called me up, and my agent, and he said, "Hey, would Kevin be interested in doing his book on audio cassette? Because I work with a new company now, I'm looking for books to do on books on tape. I never did it on tape, so like 15 years later, I'm reading this book for Audible book, and it's out there now. But it's weird when you're reading your own book and somebody's listening to every word you're saying. You're self conscious, and I kept having to stop and restart again, like almost every sentence. It took like forever.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, that's the idea that you would do it all yourself. And by the way, I'm always disappointed if the guy who wrote the book doesn't read the book himself, because sometimes those Audible books should be by somebody else. And then that completely ruins it for me, because now I can't hear it in your voice anymore, which I know that's a strange thing to say, but the fact that you did it is the only way I will get those Audible books.
Yeah, like I listened to Woody Allen's book on tape recently. I don't know how you feel about Woody Allen, but I was curious about what the book was about. But he read it himself, and I couldn't believe how old he sounded. You know, and also it sounded like he had a stroke.
Yeah.
He was slurring his words and stuff. But I think he might have been old. He is old.
No, Woody's old for sure.
But I was asking everybody, did Woody Allen have a stroke? Did Woody Allen have a stroke? And everybody's like, I don't know. And I planned for my doctor, too. Not the whole book, because he has other patients, you know.
Right.
And he listened to it, and he nodded his head. He goes, yeah, he's definitely had some kind of a neurological event. So I'm telling everybody, Woody Allen had a stroke. Woody Allen had a stroke.
Oh, no.
And then I realized I'm playing his book two times slower the speed.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
I didn't realize they had different speeds you could listen to. So, of course, I fired my doctor because he doesn't know what he's talking about, obviously.
Right. Bastard. You are. But, I mean, it all started with, yes, you're pregnant, but what about me? That overwhelmed, you know, but not overly.
Overwhelmed?
Yeah.
Overwhelmed, but not overly, yeah.
And, I mean, by the way, how's everything's good in the family? Everybody's great?
Yeah, everybody's doing great.
Good.
Started in high school.
Is it weird
and
to have a kid in high school?
It's so weird. It's so weird, yeah. I mean, a lot of weird things now, but Pimpy in high school is one of them.
Yeah.
One of the top ones.
Is he, are you cool at all? Like,
cool with what?
Are you cool at all to him? Like, you know, I have so many friends that are so cool in so many ways, and then their kids get older, and they're like, yeah, whatever, Dad. And I'm like, you know who your dad is? Like, this is insane that you don't think he's the greatest guy that ever walked the earth.
Well, he does think I'm the greatest guy, but sometimes, you know, kids don't like their parents around. They're afraid they're going to say something embarrassing or corny.
Right.
You know? And he watches all the, like, he watches SNL on YouTube, like the current cast in the last 10 years. And I asked him the other day, I said, you ever see Daddy's SNL sketches? He said, yeah. I said, really? It's been a while. And he went, wait, let's watch a few. You know? And as I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, oh, these sketches are really long. And this is, like, not short attention span theater here, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, it's changed.
Yeah, but he was nice. He goes, oh, those are good, Dad. Those are good.
Listen.
I went back to, the current cast.
Listen, your stuff, and I know that you're a humble guy, but you know it stands the test of time. You know, the Mr. Subliminal Hans and Franz.
Oh, we were the best. We were the best ever, Johnny. You know that.
Listen, I'm in. You already know where I stand on that. That's it's crazy to me that you know, this career is the twists and turns that it's taken, Kevin. You just, you know, for a kid from St. Louis to end up in SNL and just become this super loved comedian and actor and writer, that takes an incredible amount of work, man. And it really, it's been an interesting ride for you.
Well, nice of you to say that, but I'm amazed every day, like, how lucky I've been over the years, you know. And I look at my bio and I think, gee, I can't believe I've done all this stuff, you know. Sometimes you beat yourself up, you say, I'm not doing anything. And then you got to look back and go, look what I've done.
Sure.
You know, look at all this stuff, and I'm still doing stuff I love, like stand up. You know, I get to go out and perform at these clubs, and people actually come out, and you know, we get to hang out and laugh together, and people, you know, they like my material and they kind of they connect with it. So that's, you know, what more can I ask for?
That's it. And what's better than making someone laugh? Like truly laugh, especially when they got to work for it a little bit, because you've got that great dry sense of humor. You've got that same thing that Norm had, Norm MacDonald, God rest him. Like, you've got that great delivery that you have to, if you're not staying really connected to the moment, it'll slip by you and you'll miss the gold in there.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I don't have the same thing Norm had, because he died.
Jesus Christ.
But, you know, making people
he would
laugh,
love that.
There's nothing, I mean, it's better than giving someone an orgasm, because it lasts a lot longer.
Right. Right.
You know, and you 10 minutes later and make them laugh again.
You, how close were you and Norm? I mean, obviously you're from the same era and you guys worked at the same place. I mean, were you guys fairly close?
Yeah, we were pretty close. I mean, as close as you can get to Norm. Norm right. was very, you know, he was a unique, he was a very unique guy. You know, he was unpredictable, unreliable at times, you know, like you would call him and, you know, or, you know, if he was supposed to show up at a certain place, he'd either not show up or he'd be really late, you know. But, you know, smart as a whip. I don't think he had a college education or even high school, maybe. I'm not sure. But he's book read, though. He's, you know, he's street smart. He's just, you know, he's really. In fact, I remember I was on tour with him a couple of years ago in Canada. And my mother was going through cancer at the time, multiple myeloma. And he asked me if she was on a certain drug. And I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, she is. How do you know about that drug? And now I'm putting it together, but, you know, he probably had it. But at the time, he goes, oh, I just like to read about stuff like that, you know.
And isn't that crazy? He told no one. Like, nobody knew. His closest friends, nobody knew.
Nobody knew. But, I mean, what a great sense of humor he had. He was so unique and so kind of brave with his comedy. And kind of also brave, but also, you know, sometimes
self-destructive.
Self-destructive and, you know, inappropriate. You know?
Yeah.
But brave enough to go there, you know.
Well, when they kept telling him, stop with the OJ stuff, and he was like, oh, sure, no problem. And just all of a sudden the cannons came out.
Yeah, yeah. And also, you know, he didn't look that healthy sometimes in the last 10 years, you know. And I thought, well, Norm's just, you know, he's just kind of lazy, not working out or whatever, you know. And, you know, sometimes he'd be bloated, sometimes he'd be thin. And, you know, again, you put it together, like, and
right.
It was probably the medicine he was taking, you know, that was, or if people said he sounded drunk on stage, it was probably the medication he was on.
Sure. That was just crazy. And it sucks because he'd come by the show. The few times he was on, I would find myself really trying to find a connection with him because, for whatever reason, that's the effect he had on me. Like, I loved his comedy. I loved watching his movies. And he always held back a little bit, so you'd try to kind of move forward. Like, hey, I love what you do. I'm just, you know, you just try to make that connection. And I never got to that place with him. But he was just always so funny and so smart. But you're right, he was always distant.
But always humble, too, you know?
Yeah.
He never, like, say he had a big following or people cared, you know? And I remember I said, hey, Norm, would you do my hiking show? Oh, this is the thing that killed me about him. Everybody, you know, I kept getting emails from people. Get Norm to do your hiking show. I said, I know. And it's hard to pin him down, though. So, you know, finally we both did a gig. We did Kaboo in the Grand Cayman Islands. It was
right.
A rock festival, comedy festival.
Sure.
And we fly out there together. This is like 2019, a couple of years ago. And, you know, we got the whole day. And I bring my camera, my hiking gear stuff. And I figured we'd do a hike on the beach. He goes, yeah, sure, I'll do a hike. I'm thinking, great. So I go out, I pre-tape the opening, you know, I'm on the beach. I do the outro, you know, and, you know, I introduce Norm. So I got it all. All I got to do is get Norm to hike with me now. He goes, let's have lunch first. I go, okay, I'll buy you lunch, Norm, and then we'll go right out and do the hike. You know, because sometimes it's like you're dealing with a 7-year-old.
Right.
And so we go down to the hotel restaurant. We have lunch. He has a sandwich. And then I go, okay, let's go. He goes, what, now? No? I go, yeah. Let's do it now. He goes, I got to go back to my room and get my hat. I don't know where to go. You know. So I go, okay, I'll meet you at the elevator in 15 minutes. All right. So 15 minutes, I'm down there. I'm ready to go. He doesn't show up. And then I text him. I go, Norm, you coming? He goes, wow, Tiger's playing. Tiger's, playing golf. I got to watch Tiger.
Oh, man.
Okay. I say, okay, in an hour and a half, we'll meet at the elevator. So an hour and a half, he's not there. So I go knock on his door, and he opens up his door, and he goes, I'm better in the toilet. I have diarrhea. That sandwich you gave me, that sandwich you bought gave me diarrhea. So ultimately, we never went for the hike, but I have the intro and the outro.
He really did not want to go for that hike, man.
I don't think he did.
No.
I think he was just toying with me. And
Isn't that crazy? The minds that you meet. Yeah, that's the feeling I always had. I'm glad it kind of reaffirms it for me because I was like, man, he just, everything I'd watch him do, the movies, the stories you'd hear, the opportunities that he had, and the way he'd react to certain ones, I was like, man, that guy's just, he is always, he's on a different side every time, and it's never the side that you think he's going to be. He's just like...
I know, but yeah. sweet guy and very funny, and I mean, nobody like him, and clever, and just... I remember we went to Palm Springs once. I signed us up for golf. We would golf together once in a while. We're both horrible golfers, but there was a golf school, like a 3-day weekend golf school. And I said, "No, you want to do this?" And I, you know, I think I bought him the lessons. And he goes, "Sure." And he doesn't drive. You know, he never had a driver's license.
Wow.
He's from Canada. Huh. And you know, Canadians can't drive. They don't allow them to drive in the U.S. So he goes, sure, we'll go. So all the way out there, it's a 2-hour drive from L.A., 2.5 hours. He wants to listen to Johnny Cash, you know, loud on the radio. And I'm cool with that. And he's got the windows. He moves the windows open, and he wants to hang his barefoot out the window. So we do that all the way out there. And then we check into the hotel, and he wants me to wake him up the next morning. I try to wake him up. He's sleeping. He doesn't answer the phone. You know, I got to knock on his door.
Right.
He opens the door. I can't find my shoes. I can't find my shoes. And we take our golf class, and then at the end of the lesson, they show you the videos that they took of the lesson, you know, and he critiques your swing. And Norm's arguing with the golf instructor, the pro, about how he's doing it right, and he's wrong.
Man, that's exactly what I thought he was. You know what, just, what a loss. What a loss to the world, man.
Yeah.
I'm just, man, and I love hearing stories from people who really knew, you know, firsthand, because you go, that's... You know, that's my joy in this job is all these people you love, yourself, a guy like Norm MacDonald, any person that we grew up with on Saturday Night Live or made us laugh or, you know, we're lucky enough to meet in life, that, you know, the more you get to know about the truth and the reality of them, it's, to me, has always been so much more fascinating than whatever the publicist puts out. You know, that's
yeah.
this curiosity I think the world has, even with you. Like, you know, I mean, people, you know, you are one of those guys that... your personal life is really personal. I mean, you hold back most of it. I mean, your wife, your kid, which you shared the outside of it, but your comedy has always been a bit of a shield, do you think?
You know, I think at times, and you'll see that with a lot of comedians, that their comedy doesn't deal with their personal life. You know, I've always been a fan of Richard Pryor because he was really the first one to kind of expose his flaws and, you know, how, you know, screwed up he was. And
right.
It was funny. He made it funny. It was soulful. And so I think that's the hardest hitting comedy. So I do, you know, my comedy has evolved over the years where now I do talk about a lot of personal things and things that concern me. And I think it's a lot more hard hitting.
Certainly. I guess what I was saying is, you know, when you were doing, you know, obviously SNL and it was character based and the movies that we see and the overall observations of life in the early days.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah, when you start off, you don't really have a style or anything. You don't know what to talk about. So you just kind of talk about observations and things like that. And some people never get out of that. They stay in that zone and they don't want to be. They're more corporate with their stand-up,
right?
You know, than being personal and sharing things that really affect them and showing their, their weakness.
Well, what struck me about you is that what you've always done really well for me is the dry delivery of the hypocrisy of the world. Like, you were such a good mirror of the world and observational humor about who we are as human beings. That's really what I was talking about, is that you've had this ability, much like Carlin had, about just showing the world and society the ridiculousness of our nature, the just the absurdity of the way we react to things and most of the stuff that's happening in popular culture.
Yeah, and you know, for me, it's a real kind of treat to see people recognize that and then laugh at themselves about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, laughing and shaking their head yes as I'm doing it, you know?
Right, that's it. That's what comedy, that's what this world needs more than anything now, Kevin. I mean, it's, you look around and more than ever, a guy like you who can hold that mirror up, and it's not a lecture you're receiving, it's a laugh and a joke, and then suddenly the light goes ding, oh yeah, that does pertain to me as well. And that is that Norman Lear level education that we can get if we're paying attention. But it takes a real legendary and a super comedian and an observationalist to get it done.
Well, you're right, Johnny. I'm very funny. I mean, very, very funny. You know, speaking of Norman Lear, you know, I've gotten to know him over the years, and he's 99, almost 100 now. And we'll have lunch every once in a while, and I just cherish every second being with him, because he is a teacher of life. He's been around, and he was so smart, always so smart, still so engaged, you know.
Yes.
He was just driving himself until about a year or two ago, but he's, you know, so active in politics, and he's got his finger on the pulse of everything that's going on still.
Oh, without a doubt. One of the great gifts in my life was speaking with Norman Lear a couple times. I think it was 2019 when his book came out, and just understanding where he came from. And that's what I was so poorly trying to illustrate to you, how I feel about your comedies. It's got that Norman Lear thing to me. Like, it's got that mirror that he held up to society. He changed the world. I'll argue this with anyone. His ability to put on Sanford and Son, One Day at a Time, The Jeffersons, Good Times, All in the Family. He taught us more lessons that we couldn't get through. We slapped away as politics. We chose a side and we wouldn't hear anything. But with laughter came all these lessons that were taught to us. And I really, I mean, that's a huge part of all of our lives.
Yeah. And by the way, a style of teaching that you probably couldn't do now with the politically correct,
Right. Well, yeah. Isn't that the craziest part? He couldn't have been a more egalitarian humanist than he was. But they would call him, they would say, this is racist humor. And I'm like, you're missing the goddamn point. Like, it makes my head explode that we do. We slap it away now. And you're like, this guy, he knew how to do it. He knew how to reach people without lecturing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He's an American treasure. There's no doubt about it. And the idea that you get to go eat lunch with him and talk with him and just, I've heard some stories from Bob Saget about him, and just, what a sweet man. We've had him on here for probably an hour total, and he is just as engaged and as smart and as funny and as important as he ever was.
You know what's even crazier? I had lunch with him, about a month or two ago, and we were talking about where we grew up. He grew up in Hartford. I grew up in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Right.
And my first job, he goes, I put my mother in a retirement home in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I said, really? What was it called? Because my first job was at a retirement home called 3030 Park Avenue. It was a high-rise for, you know, kind of wealthier people. He goes, that's the place where she was.
Get out of here.
I go, wow. And I said, what year was it? Because, you know, I was there when it was my first job ever. I was 16. And it was the same year I was working there, 2 years. And so I might have, like, waited on his mother or bust her table or something. And then he said Neil Simon's mother was at the same place, too, at the same time.
How crazy is that? By the way, yeah. It's also crazy. I worked in a nursing home when I was 17 years old, and I bused tables, and I worked in the kitchen washing dishes and making food.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the same job. It's the same time you were.
It's an entry-level job.
It really is, man. It's when you don't have a lot in your mind, you're not really looking for a lot. That's a good job for you.
Yeah.
But you were playing rugby at the time, right?
I was playing football. I was playing rugby. I played soccer in college. I went to Sacred Heart University in Connecticut, and I played soccer for 3 years. And I'm 6'4", so I'm not like really built for soccer. I was more of a defensive player, but I always loved football. Like, we played sandlot football growing up, but I never played in high school. And then a friend of mine found out that if we took a night class, a night course at Fairfield University, we could play football on their team. So we both signed up for a course in criminology. And we went maybe three times, got 3 credits. But it qualified us to play on the football team. It was a club football.
Right.
But they had, you know, the helmets and everything, and it was tackle, and they had a schedule. And, I had a really good arm, so I tried out for quarterback and kicker, because I was also a kicker. And the starting quarterback got hurt, I think, on the first game. So I played the whole season. I got to be quarterback and kind of live out my dream and did really well. And my goal was to move out to L.A. to do stand-up, but also to try out for the USFL team they had at the time called the L.A. Express. I was going to try out as a kicker. So I bought a bunch of USFL footballs, and I started practicing at Fairfax High, which is the local school in Hollywood, kicking. And so that when they brought me up on stage as a comic, they go, this guy's not only funny, he's also the kicker for the L.A. Express.
Wow, crazy. What a weird, that there couldn't be two things farther apart in my head than being an athlete and being a comedian.
Well, at that time, it seems to be that now people are everything. You know, people are doctors and doing stand-up, and they're,
right.
You know, they're lawyers and everything. Everybody's a comedian now. I mean, a lot of people are realize how funny they are, and they learn how to mine it and, make a living from it.
What was the moment, and I won't just keep, because I'll do this all day, you know me. But what was the moment you went, no, it's comedy, it's not athletics?
Well, what my comedy career started taking off before, you know, the free agent walk-on thing. And yeah. I was too busy to play sports. But for me, you know, the big decision for me was music or comedy, because I always wanted to be in a band. You know, I grew up probably like you. Did you play an instrument growing up?
Oh, I was terrible. Yeah, no, but I mean, I was awful. Sure. But yeah, that's what was better. Everybody wanted to be in a band. Who gets the girls? Who looks the coolest? What's the greatest thing you can imagine? That's being in a band.
Yeah. You know, I was in a garage band, and this was back in the 70s. And lately, I've been putting together our song list, our set list, all the songs we played. Because I hear, like, you know, music on the radio. I go, oh, we used to play that in our garage band. So I've been putting together, like, I'm collecting all the songs we used to play.
Well, what were your favorites?
Oh, this was so long ago. Like, we did Gloria, Can't Get No Satisfaction, things like that.
What'd you play?
I played rhythm guitar. I had a 4-pickup Kimberly guitar from Sears. It weighed about 80 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
It was like as big as a surfboard. And I was not good. I do a lot of stuff, but I'm not really good at any one thing. I do a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I feel like we're kindred spirits, my friend, I promise. Dude, all the stuff I had no idea, but we used to call that, I had a terrible case of the look at me's from a very young age.
Yeah. I mean, I could, like, open up a hood of a car, but I can't fix the engine.
Right. 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 You know enough, just enough lingo to make yourself and put yourself into the conversation as long as there's no problem solving.
Yeah, right. I know the beginnings of a lot of songs, but I don't know the rest.
Story of my life. I think that Greg looked at me one day, who worked, produced on the show, who's an actual musician. He goes, you clearly now have more guitars than you know chords. And I was like, and that was painfully and horrifyingly true, and it's true to this day.
As a matter of fact. Oh my God, that's so funny. That's true. I never collected guitars, but they accumulated around my house.
Yeah.
You know, it was like they knew they would have a good life with me, and I wouldn't play them much. They'd just be hanging on the wall.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be in smoky bars or, you know, being thrown on planes all the time.
Did you see that Johnny Ramone's, the guitar used for all the shows, all the albums, sold for almost $1 million 2 weeks ago?
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, it was the one he toured with. It was about a $200 guitar new, and he had it for all those years and 14 records, all the tours, And after he passed, of course, it went to somebody, and they auctioned it off. And it went for $980,000.
Wow. I was on a talk show with him once. I wonder if my clothes are worth any money. So, by the way, I was in Cleveland last week, and I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. You ever been there?
Yes, I have. It's amazing.
Did you see the movie that they have in that theater?
I was there before 2000.
It's a retrospect on rock and roll. And the last clip is Tom Petty and Prince and a few other people playing George Harrison's While My Guitar Gently Weeps. It's a tribute to George Harrison. And Prince is kind of in the shadows the whole time. He's wearing like a derby or something, a red derby. And then at the end, he does a lead guitar.
Yeah,
and it makes you cry. It is so good, and he just does all of that, those like soul tricks like James Brown, you know, you think he would do, where he'd stand with his back to the audience and just fall over into the crowd, and you have a guy here catching and pushing back up.
Right.
And then at the end, he finishes this crazy solo, and then he just throws his guitar up in the air, and some guy's up there catches it, and it doesn't come down, and he just walks off. You know,
so great. Dude, those are the moments I lived for since I was a little kid. Have you been to Hitsville, USA in Detroit? Motown?
Yeah. Oh, I love Motown.
Oh, it'll make you cry. I mean, the story of the little houses side by side that they, you know, he bought, and he had to talk to his family about loaning him the money, and then it became another hit and another hit and another hit. And the candy machine that little blind Stevie Wonder liked a certain kind, so it was always in a certain spot. He could take his fingers and run down the machine and know he'd pull the right knob to get the candy bar he wanted. The production studio where all the Temptations were and all these bands, like what you could see where their feet tapping at the console heads eaten through layers of plywood, and it's all still there. Like it's another American treasure, man.
Yeah, man, I love that stuff.
Yeah, me too.
I really love that.
Hey, listen.
I love anything that, you know, any kind of history, music and history in general. Like, I'll go to, like, yeah, Williamsburg. Is that what it's called in Virginia?
Yeah, Lynchburg. Well, Lynchburg also.
Yeah. And I love those, like, historical tours they give where the guy or the woman is dressed, like, you know, from that period. They don't break character.
Yes.
You know, and you try to get them to break character, but they won't. You know, you try to trick them. You go, hey, by the way, is there McDonald's there? Sure, I don't know what you refer to.
Hey, listen, if you get you got some time off during the day, the Kansas City Jazz and Blues Museum is definitely worth seeing here in Kansas City. And there's the Negro League Baseball Museum as well.
I love that stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that.
Well, listen.
Unless I'm finishing a painting for my book, I got this deadline. I'll be done. I need to do like 8 more paintings before November 1st.
Ooh, who you got to get done?
Well, I have Anthony Bourdain, I think I'm going to do. And
nice.
Norm.
Nice.
Johnny Carson.
Nice.
Steve Martin.
Yes.
I'm working on Elizabeth Taylor right now because, like I said, I do a story about each one, my interaction with them. And I met Elizabeth Taylor once at a Carrie Fisher party. Carrie Fisher used to have these crazy, star-studded, eclectic parties at her house in Hollywood.
Right.
And you wouldn't believe who was there. I mean, politicians, actors, you know, authors, Norman Mailer, I mean, all these crazy people. And one time I was getting up from the couch, and I looked to my right, and it's Elizabeth Taylor. And I go, oh, my God. I introduced myself to her. I said, Elizabeth, how are you feeling? Because I knew she had been kind of, you know, ill.
Right.
And she goes, I'm okay. She goes, my back's out now. And I go, oh, man, have you tried ice? Because my back goes out a lot, too. And she rolls her eyes. She goes, oh, I've gone through so many bags of ice. What I use now is a bag of frozen peas. I find those work the best because they contour to your back, you know. They roll
right
around. And from that day, I've been using a bag of peas, you know, for my back. And it's the same. I use that same bag of peas for like 3 years. It was like Tom Hanks Wilson in that movie Castaway in the volleyball. Only I call mine my Elizabeth. And one day, and I mean, I would have that like on my crotch. I would have my back. And I keep it in the freezer. And one day, my mother-in-law came over. She didn't realize it. She cooked it. He served my Elizabeth for dinner. Elizabeth was a side dish for our dinner. And I said, where did you get these peas? And she goes, I got them from the freezer. I go, no, that was my Elizabeth.
Tell me that's true. Tell me this is true.
It's true. And I mean, I don't know how she didn't even know, because they were so stale and they smelled like Ben Gay.
Horrible. You're like the little kid that raised the chickens during the Depression that finds out they're eating their baby chickens.
Yeah, I know. So I went out and I got like three more bags of peas, and I promised myself not to get attached to these.
So hard. Don't name them. That's the key. Don't name them.
Don't name them. I got a tree. I went to Yosemite Park about 3 years ago, and I bought a seedling of a giant sequoia in the gift shop.
Yeah.
You know, it was like an inch tall, and it was inside a plastic tube, and it came with instructions.
I've seen them.
But I'll try it, you know. So the instructions said, water it once a week, don't look at it, don't name it, don't become friends with it, don't talk to it. That's what I did, and now it's 3 feet tall.
That's it. That's exactly it, man. Yeah, you can't. I have two ducks that live at Disgrace Land at that pond, and it was 4 years into it, 3 years into it before I gave them names, and now I'm terrified that I'm going to lose them, Chuck and Larry.
Yeah, I never name my kid. I don't talk to him. I don't.
Oh, my God. Okay, if don't miss it, Kevin Nealon this weekend, and it's been a long time since you guys have seen somebody is this good, and this it's just incredible at the Improv, man. ImprovKC.com. Kevin Nealon is back in Kansas City. Get your tickets. Get them now. It's going to sell out. And, man, just it's great to hear your voice, Kevin.
Yeah, you too, Johnny. And I hope I get to see you again soon.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Take care, man. Hold on. Bye.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.